Hello and welcome to Ops and Hops, the podcast for those who like beer but have to work in tech to afford it. Today I've got Anthony Savalas, a team coach that works in organizations to help teams perform better with a positive mindset and outlook. Welcome to the show, Anthony, and what do you have to drink?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Derek. And secondly, I am drinking grappa today. That Yikes. Is aged in Portuguese port barrels.
That sounds fantastic.
From Madeira.
Yeah, I've got a little bullet bourbon. Not really my thing. Usually it's beer, but to be honest, I'm trying to cut a few of the old calories here after a pretty long battle with the holidays.
So, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, we'll mix it up a little bit, I think. And for those that don't know, Anthony pretty much is the one who convinced me to get back into the training area thanks to a podcast I did with him, three and a half years ago,
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So time to return the favor. And I'm honestly really excited to see what's been going on. Anthony's taken a lot of changes in his life. He's moved all over the map. I think many of you who don't know him, I don't think there are that many, probably are going to be pretty surprised with the journey he has taken. So, Anthony, why don't you let us know a little bit about your history and the journey into tech and how you got to where you are now, which is not exactly a traditional area people might expect to end up.
No. So, as you know, Derek, and maybe some of the listeners don't know, is that I started off as a fashion designer back in 99. And yeah, and the industry imploded in 2004. I was, you know, I had my own label. Me and my now wife, we were selling to boutiques across North America and creating our own clothes. And in 2004, the industry imploded, and I needed to find a job to feed my family because I was broke. Luckily for me, I had friends in tech, and someone had told me how much money they were making in tech, and I was sold. And make a long story short, I went back to community college, and within a year, I had graduated, and 6 months later, I had my first job as a Unix admin. I was in the systems administration world for approximately 9 years, almost a decade, doing everything from Unix, Linux, Windows, VMware, all that fun jazz. And then I got laid off, and I decided that I wanted to future-proof any layoffs that may arise afterwards. And so I decided to get in the cloud. And I studied AWS for a little bit because that was the platform at the time that was doing so great. And within a couple months, I had gotten a job at a local company. And I was a cloud engineer there for approximately a year and a half. And so I went through cloud engineering, moved up to DevOps engineering, and eventually I moved into cloud training. And that's where you and I had both met, very briefly.
Thank God.
At Linux Academy. And ever since then, I was doing training for a while, quite a while. But it was more, when I got into training at Linux Academy, it was obviously remote, and it wasn't live training. But afterwards, I got into some live training. I really, really enjoyed it. And then COVID hit. And that's when I had decided to start Anthony IT training. And started doing Google Cloud certification prep courses. Did that for approximately 2 years, maybe 2.5 years. And then I realized, and this is the part that a lot of people don't know. As a as a person who works in training, we all know that we work solo. And because of that, it tends to get very lonely very fast. So 2 years of that, being an extrovert, I didn't exactly jive with that, and it was driving me crazy. And I wanted to get back into the world of collaboration and working with teams. So I started looking for jobs and realizing that my tech skills had taken a bit of a backseat. And I decided, well, maybe I go with something that's a little more heart-centric to my heart, which was dealing with people. And that's when I found the job of a scrum, went and got a job. And yeah, as they say, the rest is history. I was a scrum master for a couple of years, and moving out of the, I guess you could say, the scrum framework over a while, I managed to just find myself as a team coach. And this leaves me agnostic to any type of framework, any type of principles, whatever makes the teams work the way that they work best. And I look to helping those teams work at their best.
Okay. All right. So, Anthony, would you, I mean, the story is just great. You know, it's such a big pivot overall. And I know that you touch on, you know, everything builds in one way or another, although you probably have forked many times. You know, you, as a scrum master, you're probably not really worried about what you learned in VMware, like management and things like that. So I totally get that, you know, not everything is used right now, but I imagine you still feed off of a lot of that knowledge that you've gained over the years. I mean, would you say that your experience in fashion design actually led you to where you are today? Do you build on anything you learned in that phase of your life right now? Or you did you just kind of cast it to the side and just consider that as a learning experience for yourself?
No. So, Derek, I truly feel that we all go through changes in our careers, and everything that we do feeds back into what we're doing now. So when it comes to the fashion industry, I dealt with a lot of people. So I learned how to create those relationships with people. And so whenever I'm in an organization, I know how to talk to people. And that was my learning from fashion. You know, you're talking to different types of people. You're talking to store owners, you're talking to people in the factories, people that don't even can hardly speak English. So it was a good quality to have for me. And then, you know, when moving into the tech didn't actually go away, because now that I'm working with teams who are technical, now I can talk their language. I can understand what it is that they're saying, and I'm in the room as opposed to just listening or, you know, not being part of the conversation, because every member of the team needs to understand what each other is doing. And so a big part of being a coach, I find, is that having that technical chops, having those technical chops allows me to better understand the work that the team is doing, and to help them get to a better place with their work. So whatever it is that they're doing, whether it be, you know, dependencies, branching strategies, people look to me for guidance and not just the coaching itself. So because I have a background in tech, it really helps out a lot, I found. Sometimes technical coaches can get involved in the solutioning, but I tend to catch myself before that happens and let the team figure it out themselves. But back to your point, having that technical knowledge really helped me to become a better coach and to be able to talk to people about what it is that they're doing, their work.
Yeah, it sounds like if you didn't have the empathy skills that you gained from being customer facing and dealing with people, you know, even in a non-technical environment, take that, throw you in the back of a data center for a few years or whatever behind a keyboard. Those skills don't really go away. I imagine they may not be as fresh after, you know, yelling at a guy in the data center for unplugging a server or something like that. But whenever you take those skills you've learned, they're not wasted.
No, definitely not.
You
know,
I talk
not.
To a lot of people that feel like they're just in this dead end job or whatever, you know, they're working in retail or they're working in food service or anything like that. But you can still take those skills that you learn, mesh them together with technical skills, and you are now a more viable candidate.
For sure.
Because you aren't spoiled by, you know, just being in tech your whole life. You have experienced other people.
Yep. So, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, you said you talked to manufacturers and things like that. You know, that's a skill I wish I would have had just being in the industrial IoT space for a short time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, deploying machines and tech to a manufacturer, you know, who would have known that that would have been useful information that I could have had? And that's something you could have walked in and be like, you know, actually, I've seen this before. I know exactly how this works. I know how this thread moves, you know, within this machine. I know I need to monitor these dies and this type of stuff. So I can absolutely see that any skill that you have, anything that you're coming from, anywhere that you're coming from, don't treat it as if it's a loss. Take passion in it and use it to your advantage.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't think about this, but when I transitioned from being a systems administrator to going to cloud, I now understood the back end, what's happening in cloud. And, you know, working in a server environment, it allowed me to better understand, oh my God, this is helping me a lot, because now I don't have to order the server from Dell, make sure it comes in, unpack it, rack it, cable it, do all the, you know, operating system installs and updates until finally, you know, 3-4 months later, I can, you know, install the application. But to just avoid that altogether, or, you know, make my life easy, now I actually understand the underpinnings of cloud. And that to me was amazing. Absolutely.
No, 100%. And I feel exactly the same way. Like, I've still had to do some on-prem deployments, and, you know, you get there and you're just like, please, God, please don't do this to me.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, oh, we're going to save this much money. I'm like, are you though? Because I'm going to send you a bill in a year when this thing goes down and we're doing this again. And when that fiber gets cut out back, and when this, you know, it's just nonstop. I mean, I've worked in a facility where someone accidentally flipped the breaker for the data center.
Oh my God.
When we showed up, we could smell melting silicone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is
fantastic, right?
Right.
Yes. So what made you choose GCP over AWS when you went for training? Was it the market, or was it just interesting, or was there a competitive advantage you saw that you thought people needed?
To be honest, at the time I started doing GCP certifications because they were giving out bonuses at work. And hey, I was like, okay,
that's perfect.
I'll do it. And when I applied for the job at Linux Academy, I had asked to be an AWS instructor. And they said, well, actually, we really need GCP instructors, and you'll get paid more. I was like, okay.
Yeah, no kidding.
And, you know, that was it. Yep. And then, you know, when it came to starting my own training, because I already had the knowledge and there weren't that many GCP trainers at the moment, you know, at that time, I was like, this is perfect. So that's what got me into GCP over any other cloud.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I think most people are probably motivated by money somewhat.
Yep.
And those who say you're not, I don't know if I believe you.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that definitely makes sense. So, I mean, have you enjoyed it overall? I mean, do you have any regrets for going down that path at all?
No regrets at all. I try to live my life without any regrets. So if I take a chance, I can't say later on, I wish I did that. You know, what would have happened if I did that? There's no what ifs anymore. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's one of my main rules that I live by, and I always stick to it. So if I question myself saying, you know, what would happen if I didn't do this? That means that I need to do it and that I need to go through with it.
I love it. So do you find switching between clouds now to be pretty easy? I mean, you know, you ended up going from AWS and hopping into GCP and teaching it. How was that conversion? How did you feel?
Oh, it was fine. I mean, it's just a different way of doing things. Kind of like learning a very similar language, if you will. So lately I've been working with teams that work in Azure. And I don't know Azure very well, but I understand all the concepts. And once you start to learn the services and the names of those services, you understand what they do.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So do you have a pro and con for each cloud that you can think of? I know that's a pretty deep thing. Can you think of something that you're just like, you know, if I were so-and-so, I would use GCP, or if I were so-and-so, I would not use GCP, that type of thing. You know, it doesn't have to be a very specific, like, well, GCP has a slower, you know, throughput on their compute instances. But like, you know, just overall, if you were, what, name a type of business that you would recommend use GCP or Azure or AWS.
Right. So I know that when it comes to AWS, I look at it as Lego blocks. Whatever it is that you want to build, if you want to build something so crazy that needs all different types of services, then, you know, AWS is the way to go because it's so configurable and so granular that you can pretty much build anything you want, how you want it. When it comes to GCP, I think what I love about GCP is, first of all, the networking. Their networking stack is so, I mean, they've been doing it for such a long time that it is just really simple to use. Very, very simple. Another part I love about GCP is that everything is integrated. So when you use a specific service, know that all the other services are easily configurable within that service or just merely a connection point. And there's not a lot for you to have to talk to different services. So, you know, when it comes to things like healthcare or you're looking at AI solutions, hands down, GCP is the way to go. Now, Azure.
We've had some comments on Azure in previous shows. I'll just let you know.
I find it the ugly stepchild. Now,
okay.
The reason why I say that is because in the beginning, Azure was hobbled together. I mean, it was disastrous. And it grew so fast that I don't think they had the time to really think about how do we revamp the platform.
Right.
They just
started. It's based on so much legacy stuff, you know.
Exactly.
It's like, and they don't want, you know, Microsoft being Microsoft, they couldn't cannibalize their existing Exchange market, their existing Active Directory, all of that self-hosted stuff. These guys are going to be like, okay, you're not supporting us anymore. You're only supporting your cloud. And so you get this split brain situation that I think just caused such a nightmare for them.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, whenever I go into Azure, I'm like, the whole interface just doesn't make sense to me. There's no flow to it that AWS or GCP has. It's just everything is just everywhere. And it just, I don't know, I find that they could have done a better job, or they should be starting to advance on the things that they're doing to create that better flow. I know that GCP is constantly updating, so is AWS. I don't know about Azure, whether or not they're actually updating the entire platform as a whole, or if it's just, let's add this service, and let's just add this service, let's add this feature. So
I know they change the exams all the time.
What's that?
I know they change the exams all the time. I've talked to some other course creators who just lose their minds about this stuff. They will change test numbers. They will change names. They will change everything that they can. My takeaway has always kind of been AWS is kind of good for everyone.
Yes.
Annoying for everyone, but still good. It's going to work. Then you've got, on top of that, GCP is, you know what? If you're a startup, go sign up for Firebase.
Totally.
And you're going to be off the ground in 10 minutes.
Yep.
Write some JavaScript, hook up to Firebase, and you're good to go. Like for a SaaS, like small SaaS app, GCP is so fantastic.
And it's very developer focused.
Right. Yeah, and I know that they are trying really hard at AWS to get that figured out. And they're getting close, but it's just not the same feel. And then, of course, Azure, I just feel like it was written for the accountant. Like, they're basically like, hey, CTO and CFO, we got you. Developers, you're going to figure it out because nobody ever got fired for picking Microsoft, kind of an IBM type thing.
Yep.
So, yeah, so it's like, so those guys, they love it. It's great to have all your bills in one place and all of this type of stuff, but now the developers are losing their minds, but it's basically they're working at some major enterprise, so it doesn't matter. It was chosen for them way before they ever had a chance.
I also found that, you know, Microsoft had their in with Office 365, and because a lot of enterprises are actually on Office 365, Microsoft came in, they were like, well, we'll give you a lot of credits for you to come on our platform and use our cloud. So it was an easy in for them.
That actually makes a lot of sense. And huge. And I know Google, of course, their analytics are pretty solid.
Yes, definitely.
They have a lot of stuff, especially with Google Analytics and the tie-in to why can't I think? All the database services. I'm trying to think of the big one now. BigQuery.
Yes.
Yeah, BigQuery. I was about to look like the dummy. Oh, I'll blame the bourbon.
and even, you know, Google's firewalls, like best in class, you know. Anyone that I've known on Google has never had a DDoS attack that actually took down their system.
Interesting. And I imagine Google has a pretty good idea of what's going on the internet, of course.
For sure.
You can also lean into Cloudflare now a little bit. You know, and some of their stuff has been really, really cool. They're just not quite as cohesive yet. But the ability I've seen, you know, Cloudflare block just such massive DDoS attacks. And now they've got the edge functions that they've got. I can't remember the exact name of them, but they have edge workers and things like that. Sounds like Cloudflare is doing a really good job out there focusing on what's important to people, which is, well, egress for one thing.
Yeah.
I mean, data flow is so expensive on all the clouds, and they just keep... It's like, put it all in our system, please, but you can't have it back unless you pay us a lot.
Exactly. But yeah, Cloudflare has just come out of nowhere, and they're the... you know, caching front for a lot of the web traffic now.
Like
almost any website you go to, I see either CloudFront or Cloudflare, one of the two.
Yep. Yeah, no, that's That's definitely huge. But I will say for Azure, what do you think about their big, you know, coddling with OpenAI? I mean, that's huge. If you want to talk about somebody pushing the AI front, of course, Google has some really good stuff out there, but I don't know that it's as easy to implement as Azure is now.
So I've seen AI in action when it comes to using things like VS Code and the plugins that they have, and it is just amazing at the stuff that Microsoft is doing with OpenAI, and it's come to a point where I think that it's easier for beginner developers and for advanced developers to be using their tools for the fact that they're just faster doing it. Like, I mean, it's not going to do the work for them, but a lot of the work can be cut down, stuff that, you know, we go to Stack Overflow to get the code, just to copy paste to save us time. Well, we don't have to do it now because, you know, we have all these tools that can do it for us. Instead of us having to look it up, we can now just ask AI to do it.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. So as a team coach, scrum master, et cetera, you know, how are you seeing AI come into play in your day-to-day as far as how is it helping you? How is it helping the people that you're coaching? How do you plan things differently? Does this affect the way that you plan things, the way that you manage these people?
It's a great question. And there's been a lot of talk about AI in the, I guess you could say, the domain of Agile. And for me personally, I don't see AI helping with matters that have to do with humans. Because, I mean, let's face it, Derek, every team is different because there's different people, we're solving different problems, and AI doesn't have that, I guess you could say, empathetic tone about it in order to better help how you would talk to people. You know, sure, it'll help with tools, things like Jira, things like virtual whiteboards like Miro or Mural. Those, sure, they will help when it comes to the tools. But when it comes to actually doing the work of a coach, this is talking to people, understanding how people communicate, understanding how people should collaborate. I don't think AI is there for us to say, you can now do the job of a coach and give that, I guess, insight into what we should be doing to the developers themselves.
Well, tell us a little, and I know, you know, you are not a project manager. You are more than that. You're a lot different. But a lot of the listeners may not quite understand what the differences are, because, you know, once you hear the word agile, you pretty much immediately hop in and say, oh, you're a project manager. You're here just to make sure shit gets done, basically, you know, and to a lesser extent, you know, they might say product manager as well. Where do you fall on that spectrum? Where do you, you know, where are your talents utilized best?
That's a great question, Derek. There's a few different facets to coaching when it comes to coaching teams. Now, you could look at it from a professional view, from a professional coach view, where you're partnering with the team in order to help them better make decisions, because you're asking them questions to give them a different perspective on how they could do things, what they should be doing. But there comes a time where a team coach does need to step in and sometimes guide people. And there are times where you have to teach people as well. So learning from my past and being able to share those stories of challenges that I've run into, as well as teaching them new behaviors and empowering teams so that way they can make decisions on their own instead of somebody telling them what they need to do. I mean, you know, we've been in this world of tech for so long where people are just told what to do. You go and do this. You go and do this. We need to do this, and we need to do this now. So what I help teams do is for them to figure that out on their own without anybody telling them what they need to do. So they self-organize, they figure out what they need to do, they break down the work, and then they execute all on their own.
So you're going to have a lot of developers out there, I know, that honestly, they want to clock in. They want to clear a board, and they want to leave. You know, they want that project manager there just telling them what to do, and that's it. They don't want to have to throw extra cycles into this management. So you find any friction with any of the people you coach when trying to help them help themselves in this, you know, in this facet? Because I know that, you know, we're dealing with very, very, very smart people. So I'm certainly not going to sit here and say they're incapable of divvying this work up. But a lot of people honestly just don't want to. So you get any friction there, or is that something common?
All
or
the
is
time.
That literally your job
All
description and I just laid it out. Okay.
that's why organizations hire me, is because you know, you have that friction. People don't want to figure things out on their own. And I think it's because they've never experienced that. But when you, I mean, picture growing up and you never get a chance to ride a bike. There's always those training wheels. Well, what happens when, you know, you take the training wheels off? Now all of a sudden, oh my God, I'm riding a bike all by myself. And it is freaking awesome, right? So this is, you know, it comes up so often. And it's my job to help developers see that they can do things on their own. And it's not just about, you know, punching in and doing your time. It's about enjoying what it is that you do. I mean, nobody wants to go to work every day. Sure, the paycheck might be nice, but after a while, the paycheck only covers so much. You get miserable over time if you're doing a job that you don't like. Whereas, you know, I've seen the studies where people would actually get, they would actually receive a paycheck that's less than what they would usually make because they're happier, because they love coming in on Mondays. They love working with their team, and each team member treats each other with respect. There's psychological safety. So, you know, you're not being blamed for something that you did wrong. It's more of a learning opportunity. And things like this make going to work an awesome place to be. And this is where I take my own twist on things and build that trust and psychological safety that allows people to be themselves, to come as they are, and to be accepted for who they are and whatever skill set they're at that moment in time.
So a little bit of a hard-hitting question. So if you are training these people to do, you know, their own scheduling of their own resources, them as a resource, basically, if you're helping them to do these types of things, does that not add more to their plate that could reduce their psychological safety if they don't just have to walk in and do what they're told and leave? So now they have extra liability, so to speak, if they make the wrong choices there. Is that something you might see friction with, or is this kind of a non-issue overall because these people are just capable of doing it?
It's a great question. So a lot of people, when it comes to making their own decisions, they tend to not make their own decisions due to fear. The fear of getting criticized, the fear of getting fired, the fear of making the wrong choice and that coming back to bite them in the ass. Now, what happens when you remove that fear and it just becomes, you know, the norm? If you make a mistake, okay, you made a mistake. So let's figure out how do we fix this so that way that mistake doesn't happen again, right? So it's usually not the people that are the issue. It's usually the process that's the issue. And, you know, I've seen this time and time again where there's coaches that come in, they will install Scrum, and it'll be bad for the team because that's not the way that they work, right? So it's all about finding what it is that works for the team that helps them create the safety that they need in order to best do their job to their abilities without having being told what they need to do.
You mean like apt install Jira dash F? And Scrum's installed, guys. We are good to go. All set.
Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You know, so I basically, you know, you were there to help them foresee the issues. I imagine you give them a lot of help to see these issues to start. You say,
yes,
here are potential issues that you're going to have. And this is based on other companies I've worked for and everything. So you probably do a lot of the legwork there. And then just like riding a bike, you know, there's so much cognitive overhead at first. You know, am I going to get hit by a car? Am I going to, you know, fall off this bike? Am I going to break a leg? Am I going to flat tire, et cetera? But now you're like, okay, well, look, here's the thing. Cars ride over here. Here's the bike lane.
Yes.
You're going to say, you know what? You're going to want a spare tube. You're going to want a small frame pump. You're going to, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So your job is to basically help these people understand it's not that bad. And there are always risks, but you help provide the infrastructure they need, the psychological infrastructure, I guess you could say.
Yeah,
to but also the processes, I guess, to help them dig themselves out of a hole if they do make the wrong decision.
Yeah.
And I guess understand that they're not going to get fired.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
So it sounds like you probably have to train the management as well. And I can only imagine that being a constant firefight where sometimes you have the flamethrower and sometimes you have the hose.
It depends. Like, I mean, you know, there's always going to be, you know, management that doesn't see eye to eye with me, and that's okay. And it's a lot of just misunderstanding or just not being not understanding where people can feel safe. And there are those managers or directors or leadership that do understand it and they want more of that. And then it's about finding the right coach that is not in that mindset of, okay, these people need to be told what to do. Because, I mean, let's face it, you know, when we were younger as teenagers, and tell me truthfully, Derek, when your parents told you, don't do this, you did the exact opposite, didn't you?
Well, of course. The fork's still in the fork's still in the socket.
Yeah. So when you tell people that they need to do something, usually they won't do it. Or they will do the exact opposite just because, well, screw you.
Right. And obviously there's a little bit of leeway there once they gain, you know, you gain trust and communication. But I imagine, and we've all been there, you got the man, you know, the consultant being airlifted in, and we've all seen Office Space. So, you know, here come the layoffs, here come everything, you know, make sure you just follow it by the book, but silently start your own Slack group that constantly talks crap about this new consultant.
Yeah.
So I imagine working around that takes a lot to, you know, a lot of trust you've got to build. Do you have any tips to gain that trust within an organization?
Yeah, I mean, there's tons. I mean, one that I love to use, which is low-hanging fruit, is always show up every single day with a positive attitude, a big smile on your face. And you do that every single day. You commit yourself to doing that every single day. And when you do that, people are like, oh, This person is not just here to change things about our tools. This person is here to change our culture, right? And usually when it comes to positivity and having studied positive psychology for the past probably 6 to 8 months, I started to understand that positivity is contagious, and you see it everywhere. When there's a positive person around, people usually gravitate towards that person. So now I'm coming in as that positive guy. I'm obviously going to rub off on at least one person. And so that one person is going to be what I call the change agent for culture. And when that person becomes positive and I come in as positive, then it starts to rub off on everyone else. And then it starts to become a happier environment. People start to trust a little bit more, and people know that you have good intentions and that you care about who they are as people, and you care about their jobs. And when that happens, then the world's your oyster.
Yeah, that makes amazing amount of sense. I know in retail I had a manager. Every time we got a super – and this was at Circuit City, so you know. Every time we get a super angry client or customer would come in, you know, screaming at the top of their lungs because we changed a price or we screwed up. Who knows?
Yeah.
He would walk out and he would say, "Hello, so-and-so, can I buy you a drink?" Which is like, "I'm going to go get a Coke. Do you want a Coke?" We'll just go to the machine, get them a drink, hand it to them, and just say, you know, wait for them to open it. Just say, you know, all right, so now tell me what's wrong. Completely diffuse the situation.
Yes.
I've seen actual fights in, you know, way back when, college. you'd see like a bar fight, and somebody would walk up. And I saw this on a couple occasions. I had a friend who would walk up. He'd just see one, didn't know either of them. Walk up, yeah. Extend his hand in the middle of a fight and introduce himself. He would just say, "That's hey, amazing. How's it going, man? You know, I haven't seen you in a while. You know, what's your name again?" And introduce himself. Completely diffuse the situation. And they just forgot what they were fighting about. You know, it's amazing what a little bit of positivity that serves kind of as a mirror for you to kind of just help things diffuse and to wake up and realize it's not really that bad.
Yeah, and I think what really drove me towards taking this positive approach is, and I've never told this story before, so this is going to be the first. Back when I was a sysadmin, I was doing an early morning deployment, and back then there was no automation per se. The automation wasn't at its, I guess you could say, at its best for that time. And so I had developers on each of my shoulder, and they were telling me what I needed to do, what I needed to type in. And I did that, and next thing you know, an hour or two later, the whole website goes down. Yeah, this is retail. So whole website goes down. We managed to figure out what it was instead of me, restarting a service. I was supposed to stop and then start the service.
Yep.
And because of that, it brought down the website. And one of the developers that was there in front of my CTO, in front of my manager, and in front of my whole team, pointed his finger at me and said, "It was Anthony's fault. It was his fault." And nobody stuck up for me. The whole room just went quiet. And after experiencing that, I thought to myself, no one should ever go through that. Nobody. And so since that day, I swore that things needed to change. Culture needs to change. And
absolutely.
This is where positive psychology came into play, because it's backed by science.
Yeah.
And no leader will say, you know, that's not true, which is why when I talk about happiness, there are some people that will laugh and they'll think it's fluffy, and they'll think rainbows and unicorns, when in reality, there's actual science that backs what I'm talking about.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know how the person running the scripts that managed S3 several years ago when they took down the entire service must have felt. And I think that might have been Puppet or Chef. I can't remember. It was one of the two. But, you know, not a great day when you bring down all of S3. I mean, they took down such a massive swath of the internet. And, you know, at the end of the day,
I never got fired either.
That's fantastic.
I know.
You shouldn't have. If someone put a process in place that lets someone pull that off,
exactly.
You know, you've got to go through multiple people, and that's why these processes are so important and why someone like you so important to have around who can say, you know, I may not know what script you're running. I may not even be allowed to see the script that you're running. Maybe you didn't sign the NDA. Maybe you didn't write it. It doesn't matter. But you know that if something affects this much stuff, it needs to go through multiple people.
Or even just asking the question.
Right.
So, you know, what consequences or what challenges will we face if we run the script?
Right.
And then people will think, well, either they, you know, they'll say, well, I never thought about that. Or they'll be like, yeah, we did this before. Here's what happened. And here's how we've reverted.
Yep.
Kind of thing. So, you know, it's putting those, I guess, guardrails in place. Mm-hmm. So that way there's no blame game.
Yeah.
And everyone's happy. You know, if things go wrong, it's a learning experience. You know, it's no longer a place where we feel fear. Again, it goes back to fear.
Yeah. And do you put like, you know, do you focus on, I know there are several in project management, especially, you know, equations that kind of say, hey, look, if this is going to impact X amount of stuff, how do we manage the change control process and stuff like that? Do you take part in any of that, or do you just advise people to take a part in that?
Yeah, I advise people. And at the same time, you know, there are times where I don't advise people and I merely ask the questions mm-hmm. that have them saying, oh, wait a second, maybe I should talk to somebody else.
Right. So yeah, I guess you it's a constant balance between velocity and protections. And
for
I imagine that velocity is going to be hopefully a little slower for a bank or a government or medical.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, you're a front end for a SaaS product or something like that. Like, nobody's going to actually die or lose their life savings because you sneezed the wrong keys.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I think convincing people, especially when their entire livelihood is based on this one product, is kind of tough at times. You know, you're battling people who this is their life. This is their life. But honestly, losing a 9 isn't the end of the world sometimes.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
And so it's my mission to spread that happiness throughout organizations. I want people to go to work happy. In order to do that, we need to correct all this madness that's happening right now with teams where they're being forced to do things that they don't want to do. Management is more worried about a dollar instead of, you know, the end goal, which is more money, but it's just long term.
Yeah.
They're so short-sighted that they're not seeing the big picture.
Well, they're sighted to quarters. I mean, I don't understand how people think 3 months is enough to determine when, you know, determine anything. It's wild to me that people just think that 3 months is going to determine what happens with a company when you've got companies like Uber that haven't made a dime. You know, it's like, it's just strange to me. And it's like, oh, we need to lay some people off so next quarter looks good. It's like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
You can do better than that. So how long have you been a coach now? Give or take.
It's been approximately 2.5 years, maybe 3 years.
Okay, so you started right around when all the big fun started.
Yeah.
2020 or so?
Yeah. So, you know, I look at things in a different light, and that is organizations hire people for a reason. They hire them because they're good at what they do, they fit into their culture, and they're damn freaking good at their job.
Yeah.
Right? So why aren't we trusting them to do the right thing?
Right. I don't know. That's coming from a coach. Aren't you supposed to just constantly berate them and treat them like cogs in a machine?
Yeah. So it's not about treating the developers like children. It's about treating them like adults. They are adults. They were hired for a reason. So let's give them the space and the empathy that they need in order to best do their job.
Right. So how do you feel about work from home?
Ooh, that's a great question. So there comes a time where work from home makes sense. You know, if you are looking at a global workforce, sure, things can be difficult. But if you are local, then there's no reason why things couldn't be hybrid. So I don't know if you've actually heard this, but when people get together in person, the collaboration and the innovation is so much higher, and these are statistics, than you working remotely and doing the same thing. So, you know, back in the day, I remember when, you know, there were late nights where, you know, the admins and the developers were brainstorming about, you know, challenges that they faced and things that have come up. And those sessions, like that sticks with you. And it also, it creates a bonding moment with you and your other teammates. So the relationships that you build cause better working environments. And it builds trust. And with that trust comes everything else.
Yeah. That, I mean, you know, you see a lot of different hybrid models and things. I know I work for a company where, you know, they kind of have pods in a way.
Yeah.
A lot of people in similar job roles would be hired in similar areas. They wouldn't go into an office much, but like maybe once a month or something like that, they'd all go in for a hackathon or a meeting or something like that. Some sort of an offsite kind of to get them together. You know, my team at, you know, many companies involves me just going to conferences, and that's where we'd all get together.
Yeah.
And it was very easy, and you kind of discount the fact that we were doing that. You know, you say, no, we're fully remote, but yet we were together a good bit. And there was a lot that got done. I am still a firm proponent of fully remote teams, but I do think that getting people together is incredibly important.
For sure. For sure. And so, yeah, where I stand on it is I think that hybrid environments do work. And when it presents itself, then I feel that people should do it. When it doesn't make sense, you know, when companies or organizations are looking for a global workforce where they don't really need it, but they're doing it just to cut costs, then I think that's a cop-out.
Got it.
And that's my personal opinion. You know, I may piss some people off by saying that, but
there's no answer that wouldn't have pissed somebody off, I assure you.
So, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting stuff. I love it. There's so much, you know, we've covered so much here today that I think, I mean, I've got enough sound bites probably to fuel the next 6 months of social media outreach, to be perfectly honest. So Anthony, I mean, how are people supposed to get in touch with you? You know, I know you're such a outgoing guy. You're always about positivity, and I know you want to help as many people as you can. I also, for everybody who's listening, I do need you to know that Anthony is one person. So he may not answer you right away. But, you know, how should people get in touch with you if, you know, they want to talk about any of this?
Yeah. So people can reach out to me on LinkedIn. I practically live there.
Yeah.
It's my my online home. Or you can reach out to me at Anthony@smilingbowtie.com.
That's awesome. Well, Anthony, how's the grappa?
The grappa is excellent. And yeah, I think this is the last drink before dry January.
Yeah, I have given myself a pass for these shows. Otherwise taking it very easy this month. Last month was a lot of travel, a lot of holiday stuff, but I personally have 20 pounds to lose so that I can run the Chicago Marathon. Chicago Marathon in October, and I am not ready. So, and neither are my knees, to be perfectly honest. The age is catching up to me. I wanted to get one solid marathon in before 40, and I'm definitely feeling it encroach. I'm lucky enough that my birthday's in December. So I've got 12 months to think about it, but the big 4-0 is coming for me. So
nice for me. Yikes. It's the big 5-0 is coming for me.
Yikes.
Yeah. And I'm still going. I did cut back a lot and I realized how much my knees are hurting. So, it's time to step it up. And that's what I'm focusing on this year is getting back into, you know, my usual regime of biking and running and just eating well. And
that's going to be my mix as well. So we'll have to keep up with each other on Strava and keep launching those kudos. If anybody's listening, go find us on Strava and help keep us honest.
You can definitely find me on Strava or on Zwift for that matter.
I got to do it. I'm on Peloton right now. I've been thinking of sideloading Zwift. Which you can do. So I've got some extra power pedals. So you can add to Peloton.
Yeah.
And those, of course, will shoot out the power metrics and everything to your watch.
Yes.
And so I'll be able to record my rides on Zwift from there. The only thing I can't do, of course, is change gears properly.
Yeah.
I can fool with the resistance, but that's not exactly the same thing. So.
No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah. But anyway, Anthony, this has been an absolute pleasure. Is there anything else you want to say to the crowd?
No, Derek, the pleasure is mine. If you have any questions with regards to coaching and, you know, maybe you're having some issues as a developer and you're having issues with your Scrum Master or your coach, feel free to reach out. I'd be more than happy to help.
Awesome. Well, let's give everybody a good cheers. Let me get it where everybody can see it. Cheers. Cheers. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.